life.
A podcast of the cinema.
Where am I? What day is this? What podcast are we doing right
Who
now?
Who even knows anymore?
How many times have we podcasted today already?
This is our fourth.
A lot of times.
I think it's a record for us.
The answer is a lot of times.
If you were a Patreon subscriber, you would be getting in your inbox today
almost all the other shows. Well, Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife. I'm going to suggest that we should get up tomorrow morning and do that early and then knock it out.
Wow. Okay.
Well, 30 minutes. Or unless you want to do another 30-minute podcast after we're done with this one. Would you like to go for five? It presents more Linoleum Knife as a shorter version.
Maybe
of
we
the,
save that for tomorrow and just knock it out first thing in the morning. And then I get to work.
I'm willing to get... Listen, I'm a marathon man today, as you have learned.
Clearly.
I have gotten up bright and early with the cows and milking them. Mm-hmm. And the... then we did one that was the LKTV, and then we did one that was Linoleum Knights, and then we did one that was Linoleum Knife and Fork.
Mm-hmm. All at patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Linoleum Knife, which is free.
Yes.
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones you pay for, if you want to buy them, you pay for them.
That's right.
Including Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
$1 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Patreon.com.
And up.
This week, for Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife, we're talking about Martin Scorsese's New York, New York.
We certainly are.
Unique New York.
It is both those things.
And I watched it yesterday, all 3 hours of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very weird movie.
It's
quite a strange film.
It's unusual in many ways. We'll talk about that. I just saw on Facebook.
I insist.
Oh, no, off to you. Today is the 35th anniversary of the release of Real Genius.
That's nice.
A movie I really love that I finally got you to see, on the 30th anniversary, I think we finally saw it?
What's this year's anniversary?
It's 35th.
35th?
I think we saw it like 5 years ago.
We saw it at the Arclight one night. You demanded. You were like, oh, you're going.
Yes.
Because I had never seen
it. You had never seen it.
Aubrey Plaza sat in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's always exciting.
Yes.
You know, when the stars
come down from Mount Olympus, not the neighborhood Mount Olympus, the literal one.
Maybe the neighborhood of Mount Olympus in the Hollywood Hills. You know what we forgot to do at the very top of this program?
What's that?
Say who we are.
Oh, good heavens. I'm Alonzo Duraldi, you're Dave White. We're both film critics. We're married to each other. That's all you need to know. Anyway, I was looking at this article that somebody had linked to about the anniversary of Real Genius, and they mentioned how it came out the same year as Weird Science and My Science Project, all of which were unsuccessful, which were shooting for a sort of teen nerd science comedy thing. But to say they all came out in the same year is to put far too fine a point on it.
Uh-huh.
All three of those movies came out within a 10-day period.
Did they really?
Yeah. You go back and look, Weird Science and My Science Project also opened like this week, basically. No wonder they all tanked.
It's 1985?
Correct.
Hmm. Summer of 1985, I was not working in a movie theater.
Ah.
I was...
I
was out in Lubbock, Texas. Summer of 84, I was working in a movie theater.
Me too.
Summer of 85, I was out in Lubbock, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Working all summer long in the only open women's dorm cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
That was also the host of all the freshman orientations.
Uh-huh.
That was the summer I third-degree burned my leg in a kitchen accident that women's dorm cafeteria. Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. If you can stomach a little personal injury, a.k.a. boiling oil on your legs.
Mm.
Which is
workman's comp.
That's what happened. Workers' compensation paid for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And paid my part-time employee
salary
in quotes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think they paid me like 20 hours of worker time.
Mm-hmm.
For the week, for the rest of the summer. Because I couldn't go back to work. I was wrapped up in bandages for the rest of the summer, going to hydrotherapy at the local hospital, the university hospital, mm-hmm. Texas Tech University Hospital. I was there
soaking you like a tea bag.
Hydrotherapy every day with all the other burn patients. That was a treat.
Mm.
Because you learned in those moments that your injury was minor.
A walk in the park by comparison.
Yes.
Perspective is important.
Even though I did have third-degree burns on my legs, buttocks, and feet. The drugs were great.
Awesome.
The bandages were cool because I looked like an injured person all summer long. I got paid to lie down.
The American dream.
And get over it and heal. And I watched a lot of movies.
I guess so.
On VHS cassette.
Ah. Because it was 1985.
So while you were out having science projects and being a real genius with some weird science,
yeah,
I was home
healing.
I watched, what do I remember? I watched the Eurythmics version of 1984.
Oh, right, yeah.
Whatever.
With John Hurt, Richard Burton.
John Hurt and Richard Burton. I call it the Eurythmics version of 1984 because I had the soundtrack album.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That
Sex Crime song is a jam that people completely forget about. What else did I watch? I watched The Decline of Western Civilization for the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, you know, impossible to see until the cassette version came out.
Well, in Lubbock, Texas.
In Lubbock, Texas, yeah. And I watched Eraserhead for the first time. Pretty much anything at the video store, I sent my older brother was sort of tending to me. He was in law school at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be like, these are the movies I want you to look for at the video store. And he's like, what are these? And I was like, just get them. If they have them, get them.
He was getting the nod on your behalf. And he was horrified to even have to like look at the covers, I'm sure.
Yes. He's like, what movies do you want? I was like, here's my list. I know what's on VHS currently, therefore
bring them unto me.
Go hunt for me, please. He did. He was very nice about it. He was like, I can't deal with these terrible films that you're watching.
Definitely not his wheelhouse.
I was like, look, I'm not like you.
I need to see the Radiator Lady.
Or anyone else in this family at all. You'll find out why in a few years once I figure it out myself. The end.
Oh, being gay had nothing to do with it. You were everything
true.
Else,
I was also a weirdo before I even knew I was gay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were a Devo punk rocker.
I was a Devo punk rocker at a moment when that meant something. When Devo was still a band.
Right.
Yes. I guess they still are a band.
I don't know.
Still, I don't know.
Mark Mothersbaugh has a full calendar.
I'm saying the albums were new back then.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
The films of this week, though, however, are none of those.
No.
And we have exactly 1 hour to discuss them.
Correct.
Maybe more like 55 minutes left.
Sure.
Because I've got a very exciting family Sunday dinner planned.
Mm-hmm.
We have niece Pilar coming over.
Yes.
To enjoy breezy balcony family time.
Socially distanced.
Very distant. In the mask. Not, of course, while we're chewing on the food. But,
correct.
You know.
Otherwise.
She hasn't been. We haven't seen her since March. Nope. We haven't seen her since February.
Yeah.
And she lives in this city.
Yes.
So there you go.
Yes.
In 6 minutes, I will have to tend to something on the stove, so you'll hear and then
we'll probably pause.
Yes, you will pause.
Okay. Where do you want to start?
Well, you know, it's important that we discuss the week's greatest cinematic achievement,
mm-hmm.
The Secret, Dare to Dream.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
As we like to call it, The Secret D2D.
Mm-hmm. Big demeanor.
Andy Tennant is the filmmaker.
Yes.
Responsible for Hitch and Fool's Gold, mm-hmm. and other entertainments.
Sweet Home Alabama.
Sweet Home Alabama, which might be the best thing he's ever made.
Could be. I've never seen Hitch or Sweet Home Alabama.
Well, you know what? You don't have to.
All I've got going in on this is Fool's Gold, weirdly enough.
Yeah.
which is just the pits. Much like the secret film, Dare to Dream.
This film stars Katie Holmes.
Yes.
As a widow who has three kids. Mm-hmm. Three kids. Two of them are young and sweet, and one of them is a teenage girl. And
he's a real crabby Appleton.
Oh, crabby Appleton doesn't begin to describe the toxicity of this character. This is a character that is both written and performed with such a high level of venom and obnoxiousness
brattiness
that I want to commend the young woman who plays her, Sarah Hoffmeister, okay. I guess is her name. And because in real life, she has to be a dream come true. That's all I can imagine. Because she throws herself into this wicked child performance full force and is, in fact, the most entertaining person in the movie because she's so awful.
Well, you know, and frankly, there are moments where the negativity almost starts feeling like a respite because so much of this movie is here to sell you on the power of positive thinking.
Some nonsense. The negativity feels like a reality check.
Yeah, a visit from humanity.
But Katie Holmes, she's very stressed. She's very harried. She has a lot of problems.
She's in debt.
She's in debt. She doesn't make enough money at her job, which is her boss's fault. Her boss is also her boyfriend, so I don't even want to go into that. Her boyfriend, played by Jerry O'Connell, mm-hmm. who is the Baxter of this elevated Hallmark film.
Yeah, that's fair.
And she is arguing with the terrible teen child in the car one day, drives her car into the back end of an SUV driven by handsome Josh Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets out of the car and immediately starts saying, you know what, let me fix this for you. I'm going to fix your bumper. And he brings her, you don't need to get into more details here. Roll right through this plot synopsis.
Okay, fine.
Takes her back to her house, fixes her bumper. You learn early on, or maybe at the same time, that he's actually come to town.
He's already been there.
To see her, right. And he's got a big manila envelope with a big red wax seal on the outside because, you know,
the cover of the secret.
Something that people still use. And
bring me my signet ring.
Yeah. And that is also happens to be the cover symbol of the book, The Secret, Oprah bestseller,
mm-hmm.
written by some charlatan. I can't remember her name, a woman whose name I can't remember, and it doesn't matter. Because you all know what The Secret is now, because it was a big bestseller, and people swallowed it, hook, line, and sinker, and what they decided was that if you had only positive thoughts, an updated Norman Vincent Peale nonsense, quasi-New Age
via Marianne Williamson.
Yeah. If you only think positive thoughts, your thoughts... your intentions, mm-hmm. your presence in the universe
manifests
good things to you like a magnet. Your thoughts are a magnet, a literal magnet, drawing, and I'm not using literally incorrect in terms of the way these people think, a literal magnet that draws either good events or bad events to you. Therefore, any global catastrophic thing that happens to you, any systematic oppression or abuse that befalls you because of who you are, your race, your gender, your sexual orientation,
is your fault.
Y'all did that to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's too bad. I'm so sorry to inform you that anything that bad happens to you, anything bad that happens to you is your fault. Yes. Are you three with a brain tumor? Well...
clearly.
You were bad.
Yes. You did not clap loud enough. Tinkerbell's dead.
So, a hurricane comes and smashes up Katie Holmes' house. Why? Because she did not think good thoughts.
You think we're exaggerating.
And then blabbity 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 blah nonsense BS ridiculousness. Josh Lucas moving in to her heart.
Mm.
Oh, look. Here's my timer. Well, I'll continue this synopsis. I'm back. Put some pasta in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Macaroni in the pot.
Sounds like a euphemism.
It is. Based on a current song. Anyway. So...
You're right. I was thinking about if you took out all of the Josh Lucas Socratic dialogue scenes, and let me ask you something.
Uh-huh.
All of that, you know, like jive turkey, me get this, you know.
You expect him to try to start selling them on a mid-level marketing scheme.
Yes.
Any second. It was giving me
very strong On Becoming a God in Central Florida vibes. But if you took that out of it, this is essentially a Hallmark movie bigger budget and better cast.
Yeah.
I mean, the plot beats, the Baxter, everything. If you took out the like ridiculous philosophy, this is a Hallmark movie.
This is a faith-based film.
Yeah.
Except the faith is...
in your good thoughts.
Yeah. The faith is...
Positivity.
Believe in positivity, y'all. And everyone knows that that's stupid.
One would think.
Except for the positivity thinking people. I mean, and eventually they give up too.
Not that you shouldn't think positively. We're not advocating Eeyorism here or anything.
Oh, I am. you're much less disappointing that way. Life, listen, if you assume the worst is about to happen and then it doesn't, every day's nice.
Pleasant surprise.
Everything's nice. You wake up in the morning and you think, oh, I'll die today.
Hold that thought. We're getting to that movie later.
And then you don't. You're like, wow, I made it through. I didn't die today. What a good life it is.
This is now the perfect double feature with She Dies Tomorrow.
Sure is.
I had not really thought about that, but yes.
You know, and Katie Holmes' character would have gotten rid of, what's his face?
Jerry O'Connell
eventually anyway, because he was a pain. Mm. And he was just like telling her all these things he's going to do for her and trying to pay for her, new car and stuff, and which is, you know, a kind gesture.
Sure.
But it always had this sort of like asterisk next to it.
There are weird strings attached. Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, and then we're going to have a baby. And I'm like, oh, really? This is not
going
to come up yet.
I'm going to ship the three old babies off to boarding school.
And Katie Holmes is like, we're going to do what?
Excuse me?
She said, no. Josh Lucas might put a secret baby in me.
If we both think positively
about it. Whew. I'll tell y'all, this movie, first of all, they secreted us out of $20. I know that.
That's true.
That's what it cost to rent.
Yeah. And my, you know, because I was, what the publicist for this movie sent out in the universe was that they weren't sending out screeners. Then later come to find out that they were sending screeners to just about everybody else but me and Christy Lanier.
All the soft touches. Yeah.
So thanks for that.
Who'd they send them out to? Like Pete Hammond and people like that?
Yeah. But like, I mean, the LA Times, like not even just the pushovers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I said Pete Hammond. I don't care.
Yeah. I don't think there's anybody going to back up on
someone
that.
Someone go tattle on me.
Serious criticism there.
Yeah. So this stinks.
Katie Holmes deserves better.
But let's just say somehow, someday, within the next, 8 months, when it winds up on, you know, the USA Network.
Is there still a USA
Fun to laugh at. I believe, characters welcome.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
I guess.
Still?
I don't know.
Don't they still welcome characters
I have
there?
No idea.
They probably do.
Like,
anyway.
Sorry.
You will enjoy... You will enjoy laughing at this film, because that is what we did. You and I had a very good time.
Yes.
Entertaining each other while watching this movie.
Yes. The adult character actors in this movie are all talented people. I mean, you know, you've got Katie Holmes, Josh Lucas, Jerry O'Connell, and then as Katie Holmes' mother-in-law, you know, mother of the dead husband, Celia Weston. So I'm glad they all got, I'm sure, very nice paychecks
out
of this.
Got paid.
But yeah, that's about it.
It is the stupidest mainstream film I've seen so far this year.
And the movie literally ends with, like, the camera panning out until we're in the universe.
Because you guys...
That's where it's all getting sent.
That's where you... It's all of your wishes...
Go to Alpha Centauri.
...are getting sent to the stars of the universe.
Yes.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are.
Anything your heart desires will come to you.
Your dreams come true. Yeah. With The Secret, a book that is available in many thrift stores around the country right now. You can go to a thrift store and buy it for 50 cents. Hope it's not covered with virus germs. And if you don't die from reading it because of that, then it was because your good thoughts saved you. But if you do, it's because you didn't have good enough thoughts.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's like how many movies have been made from these sort of ridiculous bestseller, you know, kind of like, remember the Celestine Prophecy?
I know it existed. Was there a movie?
There was a movie.
Was it a TV movie?
No. It was an actual theatrical film, but it was the kind of...
What year?
Now I got to look it up. But it was the kind of thing where when they announced that it was a very big deal because people still cared about that book, but by the time the movie came out, nobody cared about that book, so nobody cared about the movie either.
2006.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Who was in it?
But I remember when that movie finally emerged, I was like, oh yeah, that was a thing for a hot second, and now no one cares.
Annabeth Gish, Hector Elizondo, Thomas Kretschmann. I don't know who, I know that name.
Thomas Kretschmann, I think you've seen him in like German movies.
Jürgen Prochnow.
Joaquin Dalmeida.
Don't know who he is.
You've seen him. Oba Babatunde, a lot of, again, character actors. Oh, Oba
Babatunde, I know who that is.
Yeah, Vernet Watson, wow.
Wow, okay, well, I didn't know that was a movie.
It was a movie.
I know that What to Expect When You're Expecting was a movie.
Oh, God, that's right, I forgot about
that. Remember how, like, Jennifer Lopez was in that movie, and by the end of it, you're like, wow, Jennifer Lopez is actually giving a good performance in this film.
Yeah, that doesn't deserve her otherwise.
And this movie is such, like, barf of puke otherwise, but, like, she's trying. Like, she's the one person.
It's like, I mean, you know, I think if you're going to make a movie out of this kind of material, you should just go the, you know, everything.
He's just not that into you as a movie.
Yeah. I was like, go the everything you always wanted to know about sex route. Don't hire Woody Allen, but I'm saying, like, no, you know, just turn it into something absurd.
There's a new film from Amy Simons.
Yes, there is.
And it's called She Dies Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's the anti-The Secret.
It is. Oh my. oh my, it sure is. Why don't you talk about that while I go stir pasta? You can do the synopsis while I go stir the pasta.
Okay.
All right. I'll do that. If I have anything concrete to add, I'll yell it from the kitchen.
Great. That's good podcasting.
Keep that recording rolling.
So, Caitlin Scheel plays a woman named Amy, and she is a recovering alcoholic, but the movie begins with her getting drunk, which is obviously something to be concerned about. But then we find out when her friend Jane, played by Jane Addams, comes to see her and talk to her about why she is behaving so erratically. Why is she wearing a fancy evening gown and using a leaf blower? Why is she doing all these strange things? Amy informs her, "I'm going to die tomorrow." And Jane is like, "No, you're not." And Amy's like, "Yes, I am." And Jane's like, "No, you're not." And tries to sort of talk her down and just thinks, "All right, you've relapsed. We'll deal with this when you've sobered up." And then Jane goes home and Jane realizes, "I'm going to die tomorrow." And then Jane goes to her sister-in-law's birthday party, played by Katie Azelden, and her brother's played by Chris Messina. And she tries...
Mark Ruffalo.
Not Mark Ruffalo, as Dave likes to call him. Chris Messina. Tries to explain to them what's going on, and they're like, oh, you know, Chris Messina just thinks she's being wacky and eccentric, and Katie Azelden's mad that her birthday party got upstaged, and the guests at the party are Jennifer Kim and Tunde Adebimpe, and then...
And they're all a-holes.
And they're all kind of awful, but then within an hour, they're all like, I'm going to die tomorrow. And so it's this thing where it's like, is it viral? Is it who knows what? But it is super existential because everybody in the movie has these different ways of behaving by which they realize I'm going to die tomorrow. So I should, or I can, or I might as well, or why not do, you know, the following thing. Josh Lucas turns up again as the doctor that that Jane Addams goes to see. And at first he thinks she's nuts, but by the end of the consultation, he too realizes, I'm going to die tomorrow. You know, recently, if you guys happen to catch an episode of A Film and a Movie, which is a podcast that I'm doing with Grumpy Dan from the Deck the Hallmark podcast, Dave joined us to talk about The Wages of Fear and Dunkirk. And in talking about The Wages of Fear, we discussed this idea that it is this existential action movie, because the underlying tension of the whole thing is that these men could die at any moment. And, you know, if you want to be all French filterless cigarette about it, it's like, oh, well, we could all die at any moment. And so this notion of a movie, of it's kind of a horror movie, kind of a thriller, kind of a sort of an existential piece, this notion of like, we could all die tomorrow. It's like, well, yeah, we could all die tomorrow. And the movie is very kind of...
You don't need to vamp. I'll come back.
I'm not vamping. I'm talking. It's very cagey about sort of not getting too into the weeds about what it all means and what's really happening. It sort of leaves it to us to sort of figure out on our own. And, you know, this is a movie that I would have always had an impact, would have always been chilling and thought-provoking. But in these times, especially now, it is super disturbing and thought-provoking and just kind of really taps into a dread of the things that we're all experiencing right now and watching, you know, as a pandemic unfolds and as people are dying of this thing in increasing numbers. I like this movie a lot.
I'm back. Well, I was gone in the kitchen. You used the word existential three times, so I'm here to fix the podcast.
Oh,
now.
Thank you.
Okay.
If the... not now, when, Dave?
I love this movie. Yeah. It's so unexpected, and they're selling it as a horror film when I truly think of it as
a mood piece.
The bleakest, sort of the bleakest, blackest comedy about
of course you do.
About how I feel a lot of the time. It is, in a way, I'll tell you, in a way, if you wanted to get all the secret about it, it is a film about panic and anxiety and dread being very easily transmitted to other people. You can suggest it to people.
Sure.
And lay out your own fears, and they might start thinking the way you think. And so it becomes this dangerous, you know, prospect sometimes. Now, there's a supernatural element to it here, in that it's like, remember the crappy Christian movie See Me Dance?
Yes.
Where the girl learns that she's got cancer. That's what the C is for. The letter C is in the title. And she learns not only that she has cancer and she's going to die, but that she has the ability to convert people to faith in Christ simply by touching them.
Yes.
And so all that has to happen to the characters in this film is that someone has to come in and say, I'm going to die tomorrow. And they believe it and they mean it. And it might really happen. And then anyone else who's in the room with them is infected by it.
Kentucker Audley, by the way, also in the cast of this film, an actor I like a lot.
There is outlying stuff in this film as well. Details and, you know, tone of human interaction that suggests that these Los Angeles people, it's set here in Los Angeles.
Is it? I thought it was Austin.
No, it's set here in L.A.
Oh.
Out in the desert. I could have sworn it was set here in L.A. Am I wrong about that?
I
took it as Los Angeles, and they're out at, like, Joshua Tree at the
I think you're
aren't
right.
They? Yeah. So anyway, there's this sense that these people, these young, attractive people who all are living a life that looks really wonderful. Like, they all live in good houses.
Yeah.
With good furniture. Like, you pay attention to the physical surroundings, and you realize that their homes have been decorated by, you know, Design Within Reach and other very cool, low-key, rich, hippie,
those
bohemian
coat racks with the big orange balls.
Yeah,
on
like
them.
There's some, one of those is in a house, but like there's, you know, everyone's got a light fixture that looks like a starburst. Mm. It's, these are folks with some means.
Yeah.
But it's not helping them.
Right.
In any tangible way.
It's not saving them.
And what is taking place is a shift in the mood of everyone in the film, a shift in the tone of their life. And it's a shift toward nihilism and despair and fear. And it, I wouldn't even call it panic. I wouldn't call it panic because in spite of the fact that they all seem to be afraid of the fact that they might die tomorrow, they also seem to accept it as their fate.
Yeah, if anything, I think it's sort of, they all seem to have an agenda of like, well, then I got to go do this thing, or I need to go, say
so,
this thing to this person or whatever.
We won't tell you what happens, but it's a short film. It's like 80 minutes long.
85, yeah.
And it is simultaneously funny and weird and dreadful and gorgeous to look at. The performances are, it's as if she said to all of her actors, okay, say all your lines as though someone you kind of sort of know died suddenly. And you're not sure how you're supposed to feel about that?
Like a mild amount of...
A mild amount of interaction?
Yeah.
And so something's really wrong? But you haven't got a grasp on what you're feeling about it?
It feels like it might be... It could be tangential to you in a way.
The deadpan quality of these interactions is part of what makes it so, like, unsettling and... I keep saying funny.
No,
funny.
There is humor to this film, no question.
I would highly recommend this movie if you're ready for ambiguity and no resolution and the fact that it's not a horror movie at all.
I haven't listened until
other than that dread is horrifying.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've got to watch the movie in question before I go listen to this, but Amy Simetz was on Switchblade Sisters with our friend Amy, April Wolf, and talked about The Peanut Butter Solution,
which I have never seen and I hear
Me
it's
neither.
Great.
We need to watch it. Yeah. It's on Amazon Prime, so we'll watch it and then we'll listen to that episode, but I hear it's amazing.
Oh, here's another thing. The only person who kind of gets out alive, and I'm putting that in quotes, is the guy that the main character, Amy, goes and asks about if...
Oh, leather?
He's a leather tanner.
Yeah.
And she goes to him and asks him, you know, could you... If I brought a corpse to you... Could you make a jacket out of it? She's talking about herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, it'll take a long time. You know, I can do it. But you know, do you know who that is? Do you know who that actor is?
Mm-mm.
He's not really an actor. That's James Benning, legendary experimental filmmaker.
Oh, Sadie's father?
Sadie Benning's father.
Oh.
Also a filmmaker and artist.
Fascinating.
Sadie Benning, yeah.
Interesting. I wonder if Amy Simon's ever like studied with him or whatever.
I don't know. Anyway, this film is perfectly controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not perfectly, but really well controlled. and maintains itself exactly as it wants to be from start to finish. I love it.
So two great movies this week. One that gets darker as it goes along, and the other one that gets brighter as it goes along.
Yes.
That being the 2020 remake of The Secret Garden.
Yes.
Not remake, but the latest adaptation of the Frances Hodgson Burnett mm-hmm. novel, which I love so much.
It's very cryy.
It is super cryy.
It's a very cryy movie. You will be very cryy when it's done.
And before you ask, I was also very cryy at the 1993 version. I love that one too. And you know, when I heard that I was making another one, I was like, oh, really? Oh, are you?
If somehow you've been in a dark cave your entire life and have mm-hmm. never heard of The Secret Garden, it was a book written in the early 20th century
yes.
by Frances Hodgson Burnett. It's about a little girl named Mary who is living in colonial India with parents who neglect her.
Yes.
They never wanted her. They don't care about her. They leave her under the care of a variety of servants and governesses. And then in the book, they die of cholera. And there have been so many versions of this. The one I haven't seen that I want to see is the Margaret O'Brien
version. Yeah, I need to see that one too.
From like the 40s.
Yeah, the book is written in 1911. This version is set in 1947.
The parents die of cholera in the book. In the 1993 Agnieszka Holland version, they die in an earthquake.
Yes.
And in they're in India. And then in this version, it's set later. It's set in the mid
47.
Right after the World War II.
It's at the moment where India and Pakistan are
yes,
separate.
And so there's like war going on, and but they do say that the parents still just died of cholera, which is weird.
Do they say cholera?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's I'll tell you, this movie starts off in a way that where I was like, wow, this is a kids movie that is not afraid to freak kids out,
right?
Because Mary is at home by herself in this like estate, you know,
because everyone's dead or abandoned the property.
Exactly.
No one thinks to go get this kid.
So she's like scrounging whatever sort of food she can find from like, you know, old plates and stuff. And just like, it's, you know, there are some moments early on where it's like, ooh, this is, they are not soft peddling this.
Then the soldiers show up, they whisk her back to England where she has
an uncle
who is a widower played by Colin Firth.
Super gloomy estate.
Yes, very, very, you know, big castle-like estate. Mary is played by Dixie Edgericks,
yes.
Who was also in Summerland that we reviewed last week. And she runs into a kid named Colin, who is sickly. He believes that he cannot walk. He believes he's going to die, just like his mother died when he was born. There's a housekeeper who runs, the woman who, you know, runs the house, Julie Walters.
Mm-hmm.
Mary goes out into the property all by herself instead of going to school, and she discovers a secret garden.
Yes.
That she learns to bring back to life.
Yes.
Yeah. Continue.
This is, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I love a kids movie about grief.
Yeah.
I think like kids movies about death, I think, can be really great. Even, you know, Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium, I will still fly the flag for that.
That's
one.
A good movie. You shouldn't be ashamed of that. It's a good film.
And this one, I think, I need to go back and read the Hodgson Burnett, but this one I felt like gives you a little more psychological grounding than even the Agnieszka Holland version, because both Mary and Colin have lost their mothers who were sisters, and they both feel responsible for it, even though it had nothing to do with them.
Right.
And I think that really resonates. I mean, I lost my mother when I was 18.
Yes.
And I didn't think it was my fault. She, you know, she'd been battling cancer for most of my life.
Yes.
But I do, when I think back about that period, for a long time, I really felt guilty about the fact that as somebody who was 18, I wasn't emotionally present for her.
Yes.
And I wasn't helping, you know, the way that like older relatives were. You know, and then I came to find out later in talking to my siblings that, you know, she actually felt really sad that like I was going off to college and she didn't have the energy and the time to devote to me the way she had to my older siblings.
Yes.
And so I think that for kids who, if you have a loving relationship with a parent and that parent dies when you're still young, you wind up with all this baggage about it that you don't necessarily, that you haven't earned, you know, that you didn't do anything wrong, but you feel guilty about it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And so I love how this movie really deals with that and how Mary has to learn that she's not a terrible person and that she's not to blame for this stuff. You know, the movie all but says that basically her mother had postpartum depression.
Yes.
You know, Colin has to learn that, like, that you know, his mother's death isn't his fault, that his father's sort of a projection of his own, you know, his humpback and his other issues onto this kid.
Right.
Also not his fault.
Right.
You know, so just all of that is really beautifully handled. The performances are really strong. Dixie Edgerichs, I don't know where this kid came from. I can see the, like, Kristen Scott Thomas she's going to turn into.
Yeah.
I can already imagine what she's going to be like at 25. She is so self-possessed.
There are child actors who grab the camera.
Yeah.
And she really, she does that. She has that, you can't define what it is. It's just that.
You know it when you see it.
Yeah. And so.
Visually, you know, this is just breathtaking. The house itself, part of the reason why it's in disarray is because it was used as a field hospital during the war.
Right.
Again, it's 1947. So, like, the walls, the inside walls are all banged up. You can tell where, like, gurneys and stuff must have been going down the halls or whatever.
Right.
And the garden itself, the way that it starts the movie, when she originally finds it, there's a wildness to it. But it becomes sort of, it blooms and domesticates the more that she and Dickon and eventually Colin go into it. I was blown away by this movie.
There is, in the 1993 version, there is more rage.
Yeah.
Between the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Colin and Mary are, like, yelling at each other quite a bit.
They're both very stubborn and very aristocratic.
Yeah. And then you've got Maggie Smith, who's, like, nervous, upset energy is like stirring that pot.
Mm-hmm.
This one, the performances are much more muted.
Mm.
They're a lot more subtle. And that gives this film a more of a chance to dig into those little, like, psychological opportunities that the 1993 one did in a different way.
Yes.
Not any better or worse, but just in a different way.
Yes.
The 1993 version also involved the supernatural, if you recall.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love
there were some, like, kid spells that were meant to be taken literally.
Yeah.
What I love about this one is it is quiet and it is gentle.
Mm.
And it, again, deals with childhood grief in a way that films don't often... Contemporary films written by people who live now,
mm-hmm.
I feel like somehow they are afraid to be that dark.
Mm.
But this is a novel. This is based on a novel that was written over 100 years ago when that kind of thing, when children were considered little adults.
Right.
That you just had to, like, show them the blunt harshness of life. And that is, I think that retains, you know, here.
So Mark Munden, who directed this, has done a lot of TV in the UK and a lot of stage in the UK.
Yeah.
Get this, though. He was the second assistant director to Terrence Davis on Distant Voices, Still Lives, to Mike Leigh on High Hopes,
mm-hmm.
and to Derek Jarman on War Requiem. So
really?
He has a really interesting pedigree that he brings to this. But again, most of what we've seen him do, you know, I think this might be his first theatrical feature to get much play in the United States. I'm looking at his filmography, and this is mainly things that stuff I'm not familiar with. And I don't know how big they were in the UK. But yeah, I'm so impressed by this and was so moved by it. And
would you be moved by any version of this film? Or do you think that we just have two good contemporary iterations? Can you separate yourself as a critic from this?
Again,
you don't have to.
Well, look,
film criticism is subjective.
I haven't read the book, so I'm taking these movies on their own, basis. I think anything could be adapted badly. I'm sure anybody could do a terrible version of The Secret.
Well, there have been a lot of TV versions.
If they set their mind to it. Yeah, there have been TV ones. There was a Broadway musical that I've never seen. So I can't say. All I can say is that I've seen these two movies, and I love these two movies.
Well, okay.
Yeah. And then this is actually a streaming premiere, but, this is the world we live in now. So it's a movie as far as we're concerned. And that's An American Pickle on HBO Max.
Was it meant to be theatrical?
I don't know.
We don't know. We say this every week now. Ever since the virus started, we were like, was this supposed to go to theaters?
And The Secret was supposed to go to theaters. I remember getting emails about that.
The Secret. We saw the trailer for The Secret.
Back in February.
I'll tell you something else. It's weird. The Secret Garden.
Mm-hmm. I think it was also intended to be
Intended to be theatrical, and the United States got it first.
Oh, really?
The UK, where it was shot, where it is set, doesn't get it until October.
Yeah, but I have no idea what's going to happen.
Look, their cinemas are not going to be open either.
Probably not.
England is doing just as badly with this as the U.S. is.
Yeah.
We are equal garbage countries.
I fear you are correct. Oh, well.
Anyway,
An American Pickle.
Stars Seth Rogen. And Seth Rogen. He is a Jewish man in a what country?
Where? Fictional. It's got some ridiculous name like Schmoops or something, I forget now.
But that's the village. That's not the country, is it?
Oh, I don't think they ever say
Schmoops.
It's something. It's some sort of
village. Is it Poland?
I don't think they ever say.
Okay. Anyway.
They mention Cossack, so that might specifically mean Russia. I don't know.
Anyway, it was a little village. The Cossacks come and
pillage it.
He escapes with his young wife to the United States. And then he gets a job in a pickle factory, and he one day accidentally falls into a vat of brining pickles. They cover it, and then the factory gets shut down for health code violations, and he is brined for 100 years. It preserves him, and he comes out of the water. He's alive. He has not aged. He is the same guy. And he finds out that he has a great-grandson, played by Seth Rogen. And then they start battling each other for the next, 80 minutes.
They very quickly become, mortal enemies.
You think that it's going to be this,
heartwarming
E.T. kind of thing. I'm going to teach you all about the way the world is now, and we're going to have a heartwarming.
And you're going to lay some old man wisdom on me, Nope.
They just start brawling. And, in the process, there are lessons to be learned about family and religion and, the way the world works now versus the way it worked 100 years ago. And there is, it's a parody of right now. It is also meant to be kind of a little heartwarming. Because family love is at stake here.
Yeah. There's a chunk of the film that is right out of Being There. Where the old Seth Rogen is saying this stuff, that's just based on his limited worldview that everyone is interpreting as this deep wisdom when it's not.
Right. And then to sabotage him, young Seth Rogen says, "You should say all these things on Twitter."
Yes.
Because it'll go really well for you. So he does. He goes on Twitter and just starts saying the most incendiary, awful Mel Gibson kind of stuff, right? And,
he's canceled.
He's canceled. And it's everything that happens in this movie is so absurd and ridiculous that none of it, you can't say, and then this happens, because none of it could really happen.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite bits is to sort of get around even trying to remotely explain this. There's a press conference and a scientist starts explaining something and they like kind of cut to something else and they come back and it goes, and that's how it happened, thanks to science. So I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense.
It's very amusing.
Yes.
It seems to just stop, though.
Yeah, it is.
There's a moment flimsy. There's a moment in the third act where you think, okay, well now we've reached our sort of semi-resolution, and now there's going to be like a little, you know, 5 to 10 minute, and then here's what happened next, and we're all happy. No, the movie just stops. Like, it was as if they shot up until March.
And they had to stop.
And then they just had to stop. Yeah, I don't know what happened or how it worked, but like...
I think it's key that you said it's amusing, because it's amusing more than it's funny, usually.
I laughed enough.
I laughed enough, I guess, but it's a little on the slight side. And weirdly enough, the young Seth Rogen character doesn't seem to have any close friends. So the movie is Seth Rogen and Seth Rogen and nobody else for like big chunks.
There are peripheral characters.
Yeah.
But no one has a real conversation with anyone else except Seth Rogen talking to Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Seth Rogen is really appealing.
He is.
He is funny and self-deprecating and, you know, that sort of everyman comedy, and he's good at this.
Yeah.
It is probably his most enduring talent, you know, because sometimes his films are funny and sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
But even when he's not in a comedy...
Mm-hmm.
When he's in something like Steve that Sarah Polley movie, where he plays the husband to Michelle Williams.
Waltz Me Outside.
Something Waltz.
Dance Me Outside.
Take This Waltz.
Take This Waltz.
Make Me Waltz.
See Me Dance.
See Me Dance. Anyway, when he's in a serious-minded film, he maintains that quality.
Yes.
That sort of empathy-driven, you know, schlub.
Right.
And...
Take This Waltz.
Take This Waltz.
And
that's what makes him so likable. So this is a likable, amusing film that wants to be more, and I think has more on its mind than it's able to deliver.
Yes, I think that's fair. But it's not, it doesn't wear out its welcome, certainly. No. And it's fine. And his performances are, like, he does create two different characters.
Absolutely.
You know, like you can always, even moments where they're pretending to be each other, you can always tell who it is that he's being by just
his
posture and a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's worth checking out. It's, if you've got HBO Max, you've already got it, so why not? What the heck?
Yeah, if you have HBO Max, just lie down on the couch. Eat an edible.
Have an edible. Seth would want it that way.
And now we're done reviewing films.
Yes.
For this podcast.
And we're in a little bit of a hurry, so we're not going to do letters, but we'll be back.
Do you have a DVD pick of the week?
Oh, good heavens.
To discuss?
I had not thought about it. I'll say the 1993 Secret Garden. Because it's great.
You're next.
Ah, okay.
You're next, because a lot of the same folks are involved in She Dies Tomorrow.
Yeah. Adam Wingard is one of the supporting characters.
I'm a big fan of Your Next. That's a deranged movie.
I was thinking about it in terms of that movie, in terms of movies that are sort of, you know, metaphorical horror, I guess. Like they're birds of a feather. So anyway, we will be back.
When we're back.
When we're back.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, think about that. Think about what you've done. Now, here's what's going on. Alonzo Duralde has a book.
To finish.
Due. It's due, the deadline.
Yes.
His publisher is expecting this book soon and very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to facilitate that, we are taking a little break. We are going to... that's why we recorded four podcasts today. For the next... 7, 8, 9 days, however long it takes until the deadline. You will not hear a peep out of us unless it's me on Patreon delivering the daily LKRX.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll be back. And if you're a Patreon person, you'll get all your Patreon shows like you normally would. We'll be making up for lost time on those, so you won't be cheated out of any.
Indeed not.
For the month of August. You did pay for them, after all. And if you're a person who listens to this one, you'll get it when you get it.
In the meantime, I do recommend you check out my other podcasts.
Right.
Breakfast All Day.
Yes.
And Who Shot Ya? Part of the Max Fun Network.
Shoot you?
And A Film and a Movie on the Bramble Jam Podcast Network. And, you know, you could also fill up the time by listening to our many friends on the internet. Go listen to everything that Bibbs and Whitney are cooking up over at the Critically Acclaimed Podcast Network. Listen to Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys at the Movies, Big Fat Gay Podcast, Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts. And if you'd leave us a 5-star review there, that would just be the best. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, Spotify and Stitcher Radio and Google Play and CastBox and Podbean and Lounge.com and all the stuff. You can follow us on social media at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. He's got a new children's album out. You might want to go check it out. Follow him on Twitter at Blutopia, BLEUTOPIA. Have a good week, everybody. I got a book to finish, but I'll be back soon enough. And, you know, in the meantime, take care of yourselves and each other. And until we meet again,
goodbye.